Good evening. Shochad, or bribing a judge, is forbidden by the Torah. It is clear in two parshios, and the verdict of a dayan who gives a psak, and it is found out that he received a bribe, he is certainly puzzled. This is clear, as it says in Shmos Chaf Gimel, Lo satem mishpat av yonacha v'ribo, midvar shakar tircha, v'inaki v'tzadik al taharoki, el tatzik rasha, don't give a... You should not lean towards anyone who's not judge worthy. The shochad lo si kachia shochad yaver pikachim v'salef tivrei tzadikim. The shochad will bend those people who are wise and even remove the words of those who are righteous. And again, the Torah tells us in this week's parsha in Devarim Tazayin, lo sata mishpat lo sakir panim lo si kach shochad. One should not accept a bribe. Ki a shochad yaver enei chachamim. It will move the eyes of the wise, be slave to the tzaddikim, and change the words of the righteous. Two times in the Torah, the Rambam says that offering a shochad violates lifnei iver. The Rambam writes this in Hilchos Sanhedrin in Perachaf Gimel. The receiving of the shochad is the issue, but the giving is only lifnei iver. Not that either, both are bad, but if we're going to count points of what issur we're violating, the giving of the shochad is putting a stumbling block, and the receiving is the prohibition in the Torah. The Meshech Chachma writes in Parshas Mishpatim, these two psukim are not redundant. The first Parsha in Parshas Mishpatim is referring to the laws of Dine Nefashos, someone who is dealing with capital punishment, and this week's Parsha is dealing with the laws of monetary issues and monetary judgments. So, it's not repeating, just two different angles that the bribe is coming in from, and the Meshech Chachma explains why you need two different psukim. There's a very important statement of the Chazon Ish. The Chazon Ish wrote a sefer, or he wrote notes on Emunah and Bitachon, and it was published in a sefer. And in Perek Gimel, Os Lamed, the Chazon Ish says, "V'hinei ein hazharas hashochad michlal hamishpatim." We think that bribery is something that is logical, something that makes sense, right? Because if I give money, so then the person will change the psak or change the decision based on the money. A michlal hachukim. It's not true though. It's an inyan sguli, says the Chazon Ish. The idea that bribery affects a person's judgment is not something necessarily natural. It's the way that Hashem has set up the world in a sense of chok, in a way that it doesn't necessarily make sense. Why? Sheharei lo asura Torah haroa atzmo v'adam roa atreifel atzmo v'afim hudal v'chol chayav tzlim bo. Do we ever say that a rabbi can't paskin his own child for himself? Can a rabbi paskin on his own animal, if it's treif or not? Of course he can. Can he look at his own shilas for maros, for his own wife? For sure. He can pass in these shilas for things that are relevant to him, even though he might possibly be swayed based on his feelings. So, says the Chazon Ish, there are many places where we should have avoidance of allowing people to decide judgment because of their negios, because of the way their heart or eyes might change based on their relationship to the circumstances. But that's not the case, he says. There's something special within the Teva that Hashem created, that there's something that a bribe, no matter what you do, no matter how hard you try, it is impossible, says the Chazon Ish, that a bribe will not affect the judge. No matter how tight and how glatt he thinks he is, the bribe, no matter what Hashem has put into the Teva, it will affect him no matter what. The Gemara in Ksuvas Kofhei is the major source of discussion regarding the giving of a bribe. The Gemara says, "V'shocha lo tikach ma tama lomar im lamid shlo zakos zachay v'lo lachay v'sazakay harei kvar nemar lo satam mishpat." Ask the Gemara, why does the Torah need to tell me that I cannot accept a bribe? Don't I already know lo satam mishpat? I have to paskin and I have to decide the case in an honest way. So if the Torah told me I need to answer the case honestly, so why does it have to tell me I don't need to take a bribe? Honestly, I can't take a bribe. Says the Gemara, Alafiu l'zakos is azakei l'chai v'zachai. This guy walks into court and says to the judge, here's a 20, make sure that you're honest. I just want to make sure that everything is done on the up and up and everything is the right way. The entire case is thrown out, no good. Any amount of money given to the judge is problematic in deciding a case. Amra Torah v'shochad lo sikach. You may not take a bribe in any form. Why is this the case? Why is it that even if both parties bribe, it's usur? Even if both parties come in and the one slips a 20, the other one slips a 20, how come we still throw out the psak? It should be even now, right? The two bribes should outweigh each other. Says the Birkei Yosef, the Chidab, in Simen Tesen Choshe Mishpat, it's simply a low plug It's simply the way that the Kadosh Baruch Hu set up the world, set up this halacha. We're not going to make exceptions. People are going to say, oh, this doesn't apply to me. Maybe not in this case we made. And across the board, low plug, we do not differentiate within the case. End of the discussion. The Torah is telling us this. Comes the Meirim and says no. And also the Hafla, on Ksuvas there, he says that what is the job of a dayan? What's the job of the judge, technically? It is to paskin the din, the letter of the law. That is what the judge is supposed to do. We are aware that in Beis Din, sometimes there is something called pshara, where the dayan, the judge, is allowed to come up with a compromise that suits both parties. Even though it's not the din, the strict letter of the law, the judge, if agreed upon, is allowed to find pshara, compromise between the two parties. The Rashi writes in Ksuvis, my shochad, what does the word shochad mean, says the Gemara? Shehu chad, that he'll become one. Rashi says, hanosin v'makabal nasa lev echad, that you're going to become one with the judge. The judge is going to try to be your best friend. So therefore, says the Hafla, says the Meiri, what's going to happen is, if they both give the money, the judge is going to do pshara. He's going to say, well, Chaim gave me $20, and Yankel gave me $20. So I can't paskin the strict judgment because they both gave me money. So why don't I just make a compromise? That's not what the Torah wants. The Torah wants din. The Torah wants you to paskin the halacha the way it should be. And therefore, even if both give a bribe, says the Meiri, says the Hafla, invalid because you're not following what the Torah wants. The third reason given by the Pnei Yehoshua is it's a gezeirah. The Torah often will make its own fences to protect itself. The Torah is telling us that if he takes the bribe from two people, well, what's going to be next week? Maybe we'll take the bribe from one person. And the next week after that will be worse, and worse, and worse, and worse. No, says the Torah. No bribes ever, because we don't want things to go out of control. Where does shochet apply generally? So, it applies generally in the case of a din Torah with a judge. But what about a guy? Can you bribe a non-Jewish judge? Would that be permissible? There's a very big chiddush from Yonas Ibishus in the Tumim in Siman Tes here in Choshen Mishpat. Listen to what he says. He says, let's think about it. But what's the whole issue of giving a bribe? It's because it creates closeness, kirva, between the briber and the bribee. The whole issue of being karov, of being close to someone, says the Hafla, is something that's only by Jewish people. A Jew cannot paskin on a case in which his relative is also in the case. That would be not allowed. That's 100% forbidden, to be too friendly and too close with the people standing before the judge. Aval b'nei noach shekola krovim mutarim. The whole issue of kreva, of closeness of relatives, doesn't apply by Gayim. And that would be allowed. A non-Jewish judge is allowed to decide a case against his non-Jewish brother. That would be perfectly fine. A kreva, closeness, is not an issue in the psak of a non-Jew. And therefore, says the Hafla, "V'kol yodim shadasa av karov levein yoser v'yadam mechesh nosno elef dinarim." And if we're going to be lenient by a guy when it comes to closeness, how much more so should we be lenient when it comes to money? Do you think if a father has to judge a case with his son, wouldn't he be lenient no matter how much money? Of course he would be. A father's going to care about his son. So if it comes to money, how much more so we should be lenient? Says the Hafla, says the Tumim. If we're lenient when it comes to relatives by Goyim, and there's no issue of closeness, then certainly when it comes to money, there should be no prohibition of shochad, bribery, when it comes to a non-Jewish judge. A big chiddush from the Tumim. All of the Achronim disagree, especially since there was a Rabban al Torah in Breishis Lamed Dal, where the Ramban says clearly that shochad applies to a guy. The Midrash Chinuch raises this issue, the Divrei Mishpat, the Maral Diskin and the Chuvas and Kuntros Achron, Reish Chav Gimel, the Chsam Sofer and Chelek Vav all disagree with the Tumim and say, of course there is shochad by a non-Jewish judge, it may not be done at all. Says the Gemara in Sanhedrin, Chav Zayin Amad Aleph, listen to a crazy Gemara. It records the case that occurred when Bar Chama killed someone. Ki ho de Bar Chama katal nafshei. Bar Chama killed someone, probably. We assume that he killed someone. Amar le reish galusa le Rav Abba Bar Yaakov pok ayin ba ivade katal ukayhu le'ene. So the Gemara says that the reish galusa asked Rav Acha Bar Yaakov to investigate and see if it's true that he killed. And if he killed, then we're going to have to punish Bar Acha for being a murderer. So the Gemara goes back and forth, and they, Ploni and Almoni, both testified that he killed. And Bar Chama brought two witnesses for himself. And Bar Chama said that the two witnesses said that I saw Ploni, this one is a robber, and this other witness is no good. And Bar Chama brought witnesses to say that the two witnesses against him were lowlifes. So even though they're testifying that I murdered, who's going to trust these two people who steal and are not honest people? So Rav Acha bar Yaakov came back to him, and he said that a thief is kosher for capital cases. So what, Bar Chama, you have proof that my witnesses that you're a murderer are thieves. Thieves are permissible for capital cases, if need be. So Rav Papi argued and said, successfully, that it's not the truth, really, that in reality, we paskin that thieves are no good for capital cases, and therefore, Bar Chama should be off the hook, because the witnesses that he's a murderer should be thrown out. Ad kan, the case in the Gemara. Listen to what happened afterwards. Bar Chama goes home a free man. Kam Bar Chama nashke akroi v'kalbayu l'chargei t'kulei shana. He kissed Rav Papi on the head, and he said, I'm going to pay your taxes for a year. I like you a lot. Your taxes on the house for a year. What does that sound like?
Bribe.
Sounds like a bribe. That's what it sounds like. Right here, Rav Papi accepting a bribe, Shochad, here, because he let the guy off the hook with a good reasoning in court, and he gives him a bribe. What's going on over here? So the Rush there in Sanhedrin asks, what's going on over here? It sounds very, very shady. So the Rush asks, why is this not Shochad? So just to be clear, the Ramah paskens in Siman Lamed Dalet and Lamed Zayin that normally Shochad is when you bribe the Dayan so the case comes out in your favor beforehand. But what?
This was after.
In this case, after the Basin released him and there was a psak, he rewarded Rav Papi for helping him out. And there was no conversation about rewarding of paying taxes beforehand, so this should not be a case of Shochad. Nevertheless, the Rush doesn't like that. Look what the Rush writes there in Sanhedrin Perek Gimel. Kam Bar Chama Nashke Akroi V'Kabel L'Karge V'Kulei Shanel Dover Ba'edo El HaMelech L'Potra Min HaMas V'Blav Hachi Petirei Rabbanan V'Karga Hilkach Lo HaVik Shochad Me'ochar. So it's not the truth, because there's a concept of Shochad Me'ochar. The Rush says that Shochad paid after the fact is also prohibited. Whether that is Midor Reis or what the rules are, but there is a concept of Shochad Me'ochar, bribing someone after the fact, paying someone after they did something nice for you. So the Rush says, no, it's not the case. Why is it okay over here? Because really Rav Papi was a Talmid Chacham and he was exempt from the taxes anyway, and therefore he wasn't really helping out and it wasn't really a bribe because the guy didn't have to pay taxes in the first place. Fine. In this case, there was no Beis Din. Rather, there was a question of making a knas in order to protect the public in this case. So the Pilpula Charifta here on the Rush writes, he says on the bottom here on the Rush, the Asra Kamo Beribis Meucheres, there's an idea of Shochad Meuchar, just like there's Ribis Meucheres, right? If someone lends money, and I repay the loan, and then afterwards I come and slip them an extra $20, thanking them for the loan, that's also a problem. Even if the ribis is not paid at the time of repaying the loan, but later on, that's problematic. Kibitznan, Besof, Perak, Ezu, Neshach, it says in the Perak and Bav Metzia, Demai, Shna, Gamba, Ra, Davar, Gadol, Shishminu, Rabbeinu, Bishochad, Asar, Af, Bedavar, Shina, Din Torah, we see from the Rush another Chiddush, that Shochad applies when it's not a Din Torah. This wasn't a Din Torah. This Shochad was this Shochad was after the fact, after everything was dent. This was an issue of Derech Knas Ba'alma. Meaning they weren't going. The question was: should we penalize Bar Chama? Should we put a Knas on him? But it wasn't a Din Torah. It was an issue of public policy. What's best for the public in how we treat this person? It's still considered a shochad. Havi kasachi zelo haros, and he says, "I want to tell you something." Says the Pilpula Charifta, "Linitzmamim al hatzibor." When it comes to voting people for public positions, you may not use bribery. Afal pish ein dineim din Torah. Even though it's not a din Torah, v'lo niskalu l'kachah filuhachas zaru mekablachas matanos al dineim. Says the Pilpula Charifta, when it comes to issues of public matters and public voting and public people and positions, one may not use bribery to influence the decision. This is the famous idea of the Rosh and the Pebul Charifta. Comes, Bichsam Sofen Choshemeshbar Simen Kuf Samach, and tells us the following story. There was a town, and they needed a rabbi. So what they were going to do is, they're going to have four candidates. And they were going to vote on each of the four candidates. But the rule was, the first candidate to get the majority would be made the rabbi. They weren't going to vote on all four. They were going to have a hands up, hands down. Not literally hands up, hands down, but they were going to have one vote, one at a time. If the first rabbi got the majority of the votes, that's it. The other three go home. If the second rabbi gets it, then the other two go home. That was going to be the policy. They vote for the first one, no majority. Second one, no majority. Third one, a majority. It comes out afterwards that this rabbi came from an influential family, and the family may have used funds to influence people to vote for the prodigal son, and that's how he got his position in the community. And the Shaila came before the Chsam Sofer. What do we do with the rabbi? What do we do about the voting? So the Chsam Sofer says that bribing a vote is not l'shem shemayim, and it's invalid. When you vote on something, says the Chsam Sofer, it must be honest. It must be your true desire, not what somebody else wants. Even if the bribed voters say, we'll give back the money, we'll vote again, they're puzzled. They're no good. You cannot use a bribed voter ever again, says the Chsam Sofer. It's not valid, because it wouldn't be valid for a judge also to return the money and give a different psak, right? If a judge is bribed and he says, oh, I'm sorry, I took a bribe, let me give back the money and now I'll decide the case. You out of your mind? Of course he wouldn't use such a judge. He's no good at all. Therefore, in this case, they have to hold another vote on the best candidate with only the people who didn't take bribes. And we see as well from the case of the Chsam Sofer, we extend the prohibition of shochad to voting as well. It would seem as well that a politician cannot bribe people to vote for him. That would be a violation of shochad. And a politician cannot take a bribe by special interest groups in order to vote a certain way. And if he does take this money to vote a certain way from special interest groups, his vote would be pasul, according to the Torah. What goes on in Eitzit government is another discussion. But according to the Torah, he would be invalid. The Chsam Sofer continues in that tshuva, sorry, in Chelek Vav, in Simon Yadal, in different tshuva, and he says it's usher to give shochad to another person in order to give to the dayan. Let's say, I'll say, it's lifnei de lifnei, right? It's not lifnei iver. I'm not giving it to the judge himself. I'm giving it to a friend who's going to give it to the judge, right? So is that a problem? So he says, no. You're directly influencing with the bribe, and therefore would be invalid. There's a beautiful article in Tchumen in Hay. Tchumen's up to the Lamed now, so this article's got to be 20 plus years old, by Rabbi Scheinfeld, Rabbi Aaron C. Scheinfeld, which he discusses this idea of bribing and politicians and all the different ramifications. So he points out this Chsam Sofer as well. If that's the case, that we can't bribe judges and they can't receive any payment even after the Din Torah, so how do we pay judges? How do Dayanim get paid then?
Community.
So that would be nice in an ideal sense. Let's see what the halacha says. So the Gemara in Ksuvas Kofei, again, we're out of Gemara Makomos on the sheets, but the Gemara in Ksuvas Kofei says that Karna used to receive a sela from both parties afterwards, after he judged the case. So Karna was the name of the rabbi, and each party would pay him a dollar after the case for the judgment. Ask the Gemara, why isn't the shochad? So he says that Karna didn't take the money as a bribe, rather it was just wages, payments for what he was doing. Even for wages, it should be usur. Why? Because the Gemara Machos Chavtes tells us, the Pasuk says, Elamadati Aschem Kasher Tzivan Hashem Elokai. Moshe says to Bnei Yisrael, look how I'm teaching the Torah, just the way I was commanded by Hashem. And then the Gemara goes on to say, Af Ani Bechinam, Af Atem Bechinam. Says Moshe, did I take a salary for teaching the Torah? No, it was free. So too in the future, no Rebbe should take a salary for teaching Torah. Just like Moshe Rabbeinu taught for free, so too any teacher of Torah should act for free. So based on this, the Gemara says, this is an act of Talmud Torah as well, Pasukim and Shilas. Moshe also Pasukim and Shilas, and therefore, Karna should not take any money for the Pesachim he gave in Beis Din. So the Gemara says, Karna took what we call Schar Batala. Schar Batala means compensation for what I could have earned when I was judging. I could have been welding and working at the cement mixer, in the working on streets, but instead I was here judging your case. So because I had to stand here for 5 hours and judge your case, that's 5 hours I could have been working as a welder, and therefore I need compensation for other parnas because I gotta eat. Schai batala. I could have been doing nothing and making money somewhere else, but instead I had to be here passing, and therefore I should be paid for that. So the Gemara says, based on a braisa, that if a judge takes wages to judge, the psak is still good. It's not shochad, but it's repulsive. It's maguna, it's disgusting. When a judge should take money, it doesn't smell right. So he said, karna, yes, it's true that it might not be shochad, and it might be schar batala, but I don't like the idea, says the Gemara, of you being paid in any form for the judgment. So the Gemara says, it's only repulsive when it's unclear what he could have been doing. Do I have any skill set? No. What could I have been doing during the basin instead of answering your question? I don't know, but I could have been doing something. At that level, it's repulsive. Is it us or no? But it doesn't smell right. If the basin has other skills, if he is also a veterinarian, and he could have been healing animals, but instead of being a veterinarian, I have to sit in the basin here as a service to the community, so that's mukhrach. I know for sure he could have had a parnasa from somewhere else. But if he has no other skill sets, so what am I paying him for? He might have been doing something else. He also might have been doing nothing for 5 hours. And therefore, we end up here in the Gemara with three levels. If you pay someone and there was a tircha involved, it might not be shochad, but it's ma'ani b'chinam, and it's batal, and it's not proper, right? The idea that it wasn't shochad, but he should have just been paid, and he wasn't doing anything else, so that is that's not okay. If the person had a job lined up that he misses because of a din Torah, I could have gotten to work today, but there's a din Torah, so that certainly is fine, because that's real schar batala, I had other parnasa. The middle case is if the dying could have potentially had a different parnasa, but nothing was lined up. Nothing was set on my calendar that day. In that case, it's not great, but the psak is still fine. Those are the three levels here with the Gemara. If that's the case, then how can dayanim function? How can we have batei dinim and people answering shilas? So the Gemara in Ksuba says that dayanim used to get paid from the communal purse. However, from the communal purse. However, you have to be aware that it's very difficult nowadays to raise money for a basin. It's not exactly the most popular facility that people are willing to hand over gobs of money for to support batei dinim. So it would be very nice if every community could pay from the communal purse to have dayanim and batei dinim, but it's not always the case because people are not willing necessarily to pay for that. So sometimes you have dayanim who work pro bono, and that's very nice, and that's a very positive thing to do. But there might be another mahalach as well. The Rav Yonasan Eibishus writes in the Tumim that in the past, people would work until they made enough money, and then for their basic gashmias, and then they would learn the rest of the day. Right? A person who would know, if I worked till 3 o'clock, I made enough money, and then I would be fine the rest of the day. If a person needed more gashmias, so then you would work longer. That's how things used to be. During that time, when a person didn't need to work anymore or to sustain himself, and someone comes to you when you're learning and asks you to teach them or act as a dayan during the non-working time, so then you can't charge money because there's no other parnasa going on. Right? Schar batala, says the Tumim, is when they come to you when you should be working. If you're working at 9 o'clock in the morning and someone says, we have a case right now, so you could say, gotta come back later, I'm not free. But if they say we need you now, then they have to pay you for taking you away from work, because your day is divided into working time and non-working time. You don't have to take off from work to teach your paskin, and then you could then charge schar batala. However, the tzibor, says the Tumim, has a chiyuv to make sure there are people available to teach Torah and answer shilas. What type of Jewish community doesn't have people available to teach Torah and to deal with questions that come up? This is not af ani b'chinam, says the Tumim. This is not that Moshe taught for free, so too we should teach for free, because they have to put everything aside in order to be available for the tzibor. You need to have people teaching Torah. It's not an issue of free or not. A community needs to have Torah teachers. And therefore, the Tumim adds, that if a person sets aside the entire day to teach and answer shilas, then this would be schar batala mukhrach. Because my job, for the sake of the tzibur, whether it is teaching Torah or paskening, whatever it may be, my job is to act on behalf of the tzibur. And therefore, it is not expected of anyone that I act for free. The idea of acting for free is only when it was capable for someone to do both, to have a job and have free time. But if we live in a situation where it is not capable of people to have free time as well, then the whole idea of teaching Torah for free is out the window, says the Tumim, and therefore you're allowed to pay this person. If the person has a day job and he's a dayan on the side, then the Tumim would not help because you should not get paid because you have a parnasa outside of being a dayan. This is the Chiddush of the Tumim. The Shvus Yaakov discusses whether there's afani b'chinam when it comes to psak, but not arbitration. Right? Maybe it's only when it comes to paskening, I should have to do it for free, but maybe when it comes to pshara, I should be allowed to be paid. And since nowadays, all of our batei dinim do not pasken din, they generally do pshara, they make compromise. Maybe because of that as well, another reason why the beis din can be paid. What's the heter to pay a Rebbe? So again, since being a Rebbe today is a stira to having a job, it's very difficult to be both, to teach full time in a school and also have a parnassa somewhere else. So then again, even though you can't charge for Torah, but you also do other things when you're a Rebbe. Anyone who's a Rebbe knows you have to take care of the kids, and you have to make sure things are safe, and there's preparation. There's a lot of other things that go in to teaching kids that are outside of that, and therefore one could also make the argument, combined with the Shavuos Yaakov and the Tumim, that the Rebbe gets paid for a lot of babysitting and wiping away tears and fixing cuts and things like that, and therefore another reason to teach the Rebbeim. When it comes to older children or adults who don't need babysitting sometimes, so then it could be that there'd be a different argument to be made for paying that Rebbe. Okay, I want to conclude with Shochad B'dvarim. What about doing nice things for the dayan? Is that considered paying a bribe? So the Gemara in Ksuv Kofhei speaks about Shochad Dvarim, where money wasn't paid, but the Balei Dinim helped out the dayan in a certain way. The Gemara lists several incredible ways that dayanim removed themselves from cases because people helped them out. Shmuel was having difficulty crossing a rickety bridge, and a person stuck out his hands and helped him cross the bridge. When he got to the beis din, he saw that this is the guy who helped him, so Shmuel wouldn't paskin on the shaila. He removed himself from the case. A Maimar was sitting in court, and a feather flew on his head, and a guy came over and took off the dirt and the feather from his head, and a Maimar saw that this guy was going to be standing before him as a litigant. He removed himself from the case. Another case, Mar Ukva, someone spat in front of Mar Ukva, another person came and covered up the spit with dirt. And then they got to the court, and the guy who covered up the spit was the litigant, and Mar Ukva removed himself from the case. And another case of Shmuel Bar Yossi and a sharecropper, and the sharecropper who normally delivered produce to Shmuel Bar Yossi on every Friday showed up early 1 week with extra stuff, and he, not even extra stuff, he just came early than he was expected to. And that sense was enough for Shmuel Bar Yossi to remove himself from the case because he felt he was being bribed. I can't ignore, just for a moment, the most beautiful drasha from Rav Pam. Rav Pam asks, what? Are these people so weak that someone wipes dirt off your shoulder that you're so bent over that you can't pass on a shayla correctly? You have no constitution, no backbone? So Rav Pam says, no. In this case, the issue is not that these people were so taken by bribes. These Rabbanim had such hakaras hatov. They knew what it meant to be favored and what it meant to be helped out by somebody else.
Sorry to interrupt. I totally didn't account for the shir. What time does the shir go to? 5 minutes. Perfect. Thank you.
So says Rapam, the issue here is not the bribery, it's the hakaras hatov that these Amoraim had for people. That, yeah, when someone does a favor for me, he was overblown with hakaras hatov. That's what the Gemara is highlighting, not the issue of the bribery. Okay, what's the geder hadvarim here? What's the definition of bribing someone with words? So the Rambam in Sanhedrin Chaf Gimel says that shochad dvarim is a real shochad. It's pasul mikra adin. The Kesef Mishnah says that the Sma says this as well. It's a real shochad. If someone does something nice for the dayan, no good. Tosus there in Ksuvah says Shochad is only with valuables. But wiping off dirt and holding a door is not real shochad. It's only a midas chasidus in the examples that we gave. And when a person does a tovah for the dayan, but it's not economically valuable, he doesn't have to remove himself from the case. However, if he does something where you feel a real level of appreciation and it's valuable to you, you have the din of an ohev and you have to remove yourself. If the favor, even if insignificant, is done in front of the other baal din, you also have to remove yourself. Meaning, if in front of the other litigant, one litigant comes over to the judge and says, "You look great today. I love your haircut." The issue there is not only the bribe, but the issue is now that the other litigant is going to feel inferior because he's going to feel he's already a step behind and he won't be able to argue his case because he's going to think that Chaim over here is already a step ahead because he commented on the judge's haircut. So to do something like that in front of the other litigant is certainly puzzle for the dayan. The Bach says that if the baal din helped out the dayan a long time ago and he reminds him of the favor that he did, "Do you remember 5 years ago I lent you my snowblower?" That automatically removes him from the case, is no good because he's brought back that sense of hakaras hatov. The Rei Chasada says that there's a dayan kavu in the city. He sees every din Torah. What's he gonna? He knows everybody in the community. What's he gonna do? So he wrestles back and forth. How can you have a dayan who always sits in every single case because he's going to feel close with everyone? What is he supposed to do? So that's a shout for another time. I want to end with 2 points. First of all, Rosh Shomach has a tshuva and Tshuvas Vanagos and Chelek Beis in Tav Kuf Ches. He writes about dayanim who take money to convert people for Geirus. He thinks the whole thing is terrible. How could you be paid to convert someone to Yiddishkeit? And he says that it's severe concerning taking money from Geirim in general and to disqualify a dayan certainly. And he says, the Ramah says you can take money to be Masader Gittin for people who need a divorce. And he says, that's not true for Geirus, which is an act of Basin. A get is not an act of Basin. Anyone could technically oversee a get. I don't recommend it, but anyone could oversee a get. But conversion needs a Basin. And to pay the Basin could be Shochad. And therefore, Rav Shomrach is very makbid that Dayanim who involved himself in Geirus should not be paid. There's an incredibly interesting and famous Shuvah of Chavos Yair that I'm just going to touch upon for a minute, just so we should be aware of it. The Chavos Yair in Kuf Lamed Vav has a very funny conversation between, records a conversation between his brother Rav Isaac and Karl, who is some German nobleman. And essentially the German nobleman complained that how come Jews always walking into my judge's courts and bribing everyone? Like, what's with your compatriots? They're always bribing everyone in my court. So the Rav Yair Bachrach's brother, the Chavos Yair, so he responds and says that, no, you have to understand that your judge is all corrupt and we're just trying to get an even playing field. And the two, the German nobleman and Rav Isaac, they argue back and forth and they're like making late sunnis kind of, they're like arguing and what's going on. And essentially the Chavos Yair has a whole fancy explanation to explain ways it may be permissible to offer a bribe if you think that you're not going to get a fair case. That is not a halacha maisa for anyone right now. We should not offer bribes ever. But in general, it's just a very interesting tshuva about what was going on at that time, and one relates to those issues of faulty courts and how to rectify those issues.